What's up, you guys? I'm Haley.
And I'm Andrea.
And this is Inhuman, a true crime podcast. All right, welcome back, you guys. We are, I think, just going to dive right in. I don't think we really have any news or updates or anything, so we'll just get into today's episode.
Sounds good.
So today we are going to be talking about the 1966 unsolved triple homicide of Robert, Helen, and Joy Sims. And this is actually suggested by one of our listeners, Paige M. So thank you, Paige, for the suggestion. So, October 22nd, 1966 was a typical fall Saturday in Tallahassee, Florida, with the majority of the residents attending the Florida State-Mississippi State football game. So, Tallahassee is where Florida State University is, and my mom went to Florida State, so, like, I feel connected to Tallahassee a little bit, even though I've never been there. But most of the residents were at the football game. When you live in kind of a college town like that, that's kind of what happens. Everybody goes to the games on game day.
Yep.
So typically on home football game days, the entire community was at the stadium supporting the Seminoles. And because of that, the streets would be pretty quiet. It would kind of feel almost like a ghost town on game days. And I can totally, like, picture that, because when I was at Purdue, that's exactly how West Lafayette felt on game days. If you weren't at the game, like, it felt like you were in a ghost town. So on this particular Saturday, three members of the Sims family decided to stay home. So this was Robert, his wife Helen, and their youngest daughter Joy. And they all stayed home during the game, while the other two members of the family were babysitting and attending the game. So the family were living in Tallahassee because recently, 42-year-old Dr. Robert Sims had gotten a new job working as a technology expert with the Department of Education at Florida State. His wife, 34-year-old Helen Sims, was a Sunday school teacher, and the couple had three children, 12-year-old Joy Lynn, 15-year-old Judith or Judy Ann, and 17-year-old Norma Jeanette, and I've sometimes seen her referred to as Jeannie, but I've more seen her referred to as Norma, so I'm just going to go with Norma.
Okay.
So the Sims were a well-liked and well-respected family in Tallahassee. They were known as being loving, joyful, you know, it wasn't a super huge town, and so everybody, you know, kind of got to know them, and everybody said they were really friendly. After watching the Seminoles win 10-1, Norma headed home from the game, but when she got home, she was confused to find that her parents and younger sister were gone. The TV in the living room was turned on, but no one was in sight. So it was as if they had been sitting watching the game on the TV, but they just left.
Like something happened, maybe?
Yeah, exactly. She was kind of like, what the heck? Like,
this is weird.
The TV's on. It looks like they should be here. You know, it's not like everything is closed up and locked up and, like, they would have left the house. Like, it looked like somebody should be there.
Right.
So she looked around the house for her family, and when she came up to her parents' bedroom, what she found horrified her.
Oh no.
Her parents were bound to their bed and blindfolded. They had both been shot in the head. Robert once, Helen twice.
They were bound to the bed? Oh my gosh.
Yeah. They were actually still alive.
No.
But just barely. And then Joy Sims, her younger sister, was lying on the floor. She had been shot and stabbed 6 times, and she was no longer alive.
Oh my god, that's awful.
So Norma picked up the phone and called the local funeral home, telling them, quote, something terrible has happened. Please come. Now, you might be wondering, why the hell did she not call 911?
Yeah.
Because that was my first question. Well, the 911 emergency number in the United States was not established until just over a year later in November 1967.
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. So she, the quickest, you know, person she could think to call was the Bevis Funeral Home. Mm-hmm. So that's who she called.
Wow.
So Russell Bevis, the director of the funeral home, and his son, 16-year-old Rocky Bevis, arrived shortly at the Sims home. Robert and Helen were still barely hanging on to life when they got there, so Russell worked to free them from the bindings. because he was, you know, trying to save their life. But this actually would later become a big problem in the case because it kind of compromised the crime scene.
Right.
But at the time, he was just trying to save them. They were still alive, so nobody blames him or anything.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Robert Sims ended up dying later that day. I couldn't find exactly if he died, like, at the crime scene still or if he was taken to the hospital, but he died that day. Helen was transported to a hospital where she was operated on, and she made it out of surgery, but the bullets had gone really deep into her brain, so she was in a coma. And unfortunately, she never regained consciousness and passed away 9 days later. So back to October 22nd, Officer E.C. Cooper Donnelly was the first investigator on the scene, and he recalls just how horrific the sight in the bedroom was. The next investigator to arrive was 24-year-old Larry Campbell, who eventually became the lead detective on the case. He quickly began working to figure out what happened to this poor family, and the first thought that investigators had was it could have been a botched robbery. Nobody in the community could fathom, like, why this family would just randomly be killed, so they figured it had to be a random robbery gone wrong. However, there was no evidence that a single thing had been taken from the house. There was even cash laying out around in plain sight, and it wasn't taken. There was also no sign of a break-in, so that theory was basically ruled out, and investigators had very little to go on. So kind of going over the things that they were able to discover. First of all, they determined that the attacks happened shortly before Norma had arrived home. So this was partially due to the fact that Robert and Helen were still alive when she found them, and they had been, you know, shot in the head. So if they were going to, you know, die, they would have died relatively quickly. You know, you can definitely still live, but both of them still being alive kind of told them, okay, this had to have happened not too long before she arrived home.
Okay.
This was also corroborated by a neighbor who told police that they had heard screams around 10:45 p.m., not long before the game had ended. They also figured that the attack was a complete surprise. There were half-drunk coffee cups on the kitchen table and a full ashtray in the living room, indicating that, you know, the Sims weren't expecting anyone to come over. It wasn't like somebody, you know, was coming over to watch the game or anything like that. It seemed like it was a surprise. The biggest piece of evidence came from the knots used to tie Robert and Helen to the bed. So they were granny knots, which is just a type of knot, and they were done using things from the house. So this included lingerie, socks, pantyhose, and, like, ties.
Wow.
Not bow ties, but suit ties.
Yeah.
So this was kind of confusing to investigators because they were like, if it's not a botched robbery and somebody had planned to come do this, why wouldn't they have brought something?
Yeah, that always makes me think it was somebody within the home. But,
yeah,
you know, obviously that every case is different. The whole family's, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that definitely could be a possibility. In this case, so both of the girls that were in the family had, like, solid alibis,
right.
And then there wasn't a gun found, so, like, one of them couldn't have necessarily, like, shot themselves because there was no gun anywhere. But it also, people were like, again, like, if somebody had come here planning to do this, why would they have not brought something with them?
Yeah, exactly. Well, they must have brought at least a gun, right? But
yeah, exactly. But not anything to tie them up. And I mean, you could probably figure that there's something in the house that you could use, but those things that they used aren't necessarily easy to tie knots with. So it doesn't, to me, it doesn't seem like they had planned to tie them up.
Right.
So that was kind of the biggest thing that investigators got. And other than that, they had no leads. They combed through the surrounding area looking for any evidence. And they even drained a nearby pond to try to find the gun, like if it had been discarded. But they found nothing.
Wow.
Trick-or-treating in the Sims neighborhood was canceled that year because this was just, you know, a couple days before Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
And these murders shook up the entire community, which at the time, it was pretty small, just about 100,000 residents. So it wasn't like a big city.
Yeah.
You know, people, it was a tight-knit community, and it really, shook up the entire community. People sought licenses to buy guns for the first time in Tallahassee history. Hardware stores ran out of locks, bolts, and knives. Martial arts classes became more popular, and everybody was just really on edge. One neighbor of the Sims said that she didn't let her kids play outside anymore, and for several weeks after the murders, police patrolled the streets way more so than ever before. Also, houses on Court Drive where the Sims lived could not sell, like nobody could sell their house. And people were even going to the store and buying water guns to fill up with an ammonia mixture to basically use as protection.
Oh my gosh, like pepper spray?
Yeah, like they were trying to like have some way to protect themselves, and this really shook up the entire town.
Yeah.
So the case started to go cold. The police found nothing in the searches, no tips were leading anywhere, and there were just no leads. With no new information from the police, of course, rumors started to speculate in the town, specifically about a local pastor being involved in the murder.
Oh.
Or murders.
Yeah.
So C.A. Robert was a well-liked pastor at the First Baptist Church, one of the city's oldest churches, and the suspicion on him stemmed from rumors that he was having an affair with Helen Sims. And Helen had previously worked at the church as a secretary, and she had actually quit not long before the murders. So people speculated that they were having an affair, and then maybe things ended badly, and he killed her family in retaliation. And this could potentially explain the knots being tied by things in the house, because maybe he hadn't planned to do that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So that was kind of the rumor going around town, but this was literally just from rumors. Like, there wasn't any proof, and from everything I could find, it does not seem like Helen was having an affair. It was literally just rumors.
Yeah.
But because there were no other leads, and Tallahassee wasn't a big town, the rumors spread like wildfire, and police started looking into Roberts. They watched him and his parish for months, but nothing they observed pointed to him being involved, and he also had a solid alibi.
Mm.
He was seen on film at the football game, like, during the whole game, because he was a chaplain for the game, so he was seen there the whole time, and his alibi checked out. Unfortunately, because of all of the attention put on him, he still stepped down as pastor, and he unfortunately passed away a few years later in an accident. So, that just made me really sad.
Yeah, like, what a...
Especially because it was literally all speculation. Like, it was all rumors. It wasn't even like, yes, they were having an affair. Like,
right.
There wasn't even evidence of an affair. It was just people being like, well, this had to be it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hearsay. All I can think of is the Johnny Depp trial.
I know. As soon as I said it, I was like, that's hearsay.
Yep. Okay. If you guys haven't, quick interlude, if you guys haven't watched the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial, Amber Heard's lawyers are basically notorious for objecting and saying that everything is hearsay.
Everything. So yeah, it's silly.
It's kind of become like
entertaining,
a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, okay, back to the story. So after the pastor was ruled out, they didn't really have anything. And then at one point, the lead investigator, Larry Campbell, came forward and claimed that he knew who killed the Sims, but he couldn't share any names because he didn't want to improperly accuse someone without having any proof.
Oh.
He made several claims about several different things. None of this has ever been proven. But a couple things are that he said that there were two murders, which I honestly do think is kind of possible. Likely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To take down three people? Three adults, seemingly? I mean, she was 15. Yeah.
She was 12. But
oh,
yeah,
she was 12.
Still,
okay.
Like, she's not like a baby.
Yeah.
No, it's okay.
Yeah.
So he also, though, said that there was a potential sex ring and potentially necrophilia involved. So he's just making all these claims.
I was going to say, was there any evidence on the bodies of that, or is he just really pulling that out of his ass?
As far as everything that's been released, there is no evidence of that.
Okay.
It's never been proven, and some people actually believe that he came forward with this information to just try and get a book or documentary deal.
Wow.
And, like, sensationalize the crime. Again, that hasn't been proven, that's just what people speculate, but...
Yeah, well, why else lie like that?
Yeah. A local author named Henry Cabbage actually began working on writing a book recounting the murders, and while doing so, he found footage of a police interrogation of one suspect. So this suspect was a woman whose boyfriend lived near the Sims house, and after this became public, she came out and denied having any involvement in the murders, but she did claim that she went to the Sims house that night before they were killed.
Okay.
So I'm guessing that that's why she was interviewed. Her name has never been released. I'm guessing that that's the reason she was interviewed, because she was there.
Right.
And they were kind of trying to figure out if she knew anything. Out,
for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But there's not a lot of information out there about her or what this interview was about. And her boyfriend, who she later married and divorced, also denied being involved. And that didn't go anywhere.
Okay.
So there was only one other quote-unquote, like, real lead that ever came from the investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of a big one.
Oh.
So 19-year-old Mary Charles LaJoy and 20-year-old Vernon Fox were a couple who lived in Tallahassee and were described by other residents as being a little bit odd. Mary was reportedly obsessed with death. Oftentimes, or not often, but several times being caught breaking into funeral homes.
All right.
And then Vernon was known as being a peeping Tom. And reportedly, he had even been caught peeping at Joy Sims just a week before the murders.
Okay. He wasn't arrested? Mm-hmm. I guess, did she not report it? She just told some people about it, or?
Yeah, I don't know where if somebody else saw it or like where that came from, but okay. Yeah, he wasn't arrested for that.
Yikes.
When Mary and Vernon were interviewed, they also gave conflicting statements that ended up changing over time. So, you know, we've said this before, you might remember things, forget things when you're in a distressing situation, mm-hmm. but when your statement changes and it's conflicting against somebody that, like, you supposedly were with that night, it can definitely raise some red flags. So many people suspected that they could have been involved, but police couldn't prove anything and they were never arrested. In the 1980s, about 15 years after the murders, Mary came forward and accused Vernon, who was now her husband, of committing the murders. So she said, yep, he did it.
Oh.
And at first, this seemed huge. It was finally a break in the case. You know, they had been looked into. They had been really suspicious back in 1966 when it happened. However, as they kind of started looking into her a little bit more and her accusation, it became clear to them that Mary was just after the reward money being offered in the case. So because of that, her accusation was discarded.
Good.
Now, there was still a lot of suspicion around the couple and a lot of potential, you know, things that could point to them, but police didn't have enough evidence to make an arrest. Since then, Vernon has given several interviews and shared online widely, like he's always commenting on pages and forums, trying to clear his name. Now, this next thing I'm going to talk about, I'm just going to preface it with, this is all from a Facebook group and comments and speculation. I haven't found this like officially reported anywhere, but I think it's really interesting and I wanted to share it with you guys. But just know that this isn't officially reported, and Mary and Vernon have never been accused by police, never been charged, never been arrested or anything. And I'm not saying they did it. I'm just sharing,
putting the information
what some
out
people
there.
Speculate.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Let's hear it.
So this Facebook page is called Justice for Joy Solving the Sims Murder, and I will link it in the show notes because they don't share a ton of updates just because there's not a ton, but whenever there is one, they post in that group, and there's also a lot of really interesting discussions in some of the comments, so I encourage you guys, all go look at that.
That's so interesting that a case from that far, like that long ago, has like a whole ass Facebook yeah. group that's active now.
I think it's because, I mean, it's not super active, like there's not a ton of, it's not like there's posts all the time, but I think it's because this is honestly one of Florida's most notorious crimes, yeah. and especially Tallahassee, like Ted Bundy committed murders at Florida State,
right.
and people, like some of the articles I read said that this crime is even bigger than that because wow. it's unsolved, and yeah. it's like, you know, three people were murdered right. in cold blood, and it's just nobody knows what happened.
Yeah.
So on this Facebook page, there was a post from about 2 years ago. And allegedly, this post says that, or a commenter said, that Vernon Fox's dad was a highly ranked criminologist at FSU, who also worked a lot with law enforcement and was apparently well-regarded because he probably helped them with a lot of cases.
Right.
So there's speculation that Vernon and Mary basically murdered this family and then got away with it because they had read Vernon Sr., Vernon's dad's books.
Mm-hmm.
And so they kind of had known how to cover it up. I mean, at this time, if you think about it, 1966, there's not DNA technology. There's not a ton of forensic testing. So there's not necessarily that much you kind of have to cover up.
Right.
And he's a criminologist, so he's looking at some of the psychology behind it. And I'm sure he wrote about that in his book. And they probably could have gotten an idea of how to get away with a murder by reading those books.
Okay.
This theory also says that possibly Vernon Sr. being so well-regarded by law enforcement could have kind of helped clear Mary and his son's names. Now, this is based around speculation that Vernon, quote, had a thing for Joy that Mary was jealous of. So as I mentioned, it was reported that Vernon was a peeping Tom and had been caught peeping on Joy Sims before the murders.
Right.
So this is basically saying Vernon was, like, obsessed with Mary or whatever, however you want to put it. Or not Mary, sorry. Joy.
Yeah.
However you want to put it. And then Mary got jealous and maybe did something.
Okay.
And we also know that Mary kind of had a fascination with death.
Yeah.
What is very interesting and what makes me somewhat believe this is that Joy was the only victim that was stabbed.
Yeah.
It was also reported, and I didn't mention this earlier because I wanted to share it now, her pants had been pulled down. Now, I don't know if they did any type of testing for sexual assault. I was not able to find an autopsy report or anything to confirm or deny that. But if her pants were pulled down, somewhat kind of implies that she had been sexually assaulted or at least somebody attempted to sexually assault her.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be motive.
I've also heard in, like, other cases, and I can't think of anything specifically off the top of my head, but sometimes the, like, killer will remove their clothing more as a, like, a display.
Yeah.
Like, of embarrassment, like, to embarrass them. So.
Yep.
If she was jealous, then that could be a thing, too, especially if there's no, you know, sexual report or, like, you know.
From, like, the autopsy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, I don't know, they haven't released it, so there definitely could be. But it's just interesting that she was the only one stabbed, her pants were pulled down. I mean, the mom was also a woman, so you'd think if it was, like, fully sexually motivated that she would also have endured some of the same injuries or had her pants, you know, pulled down or something. We don't know. This is all just speculation.
Yeah.
But I do think that it's really interesting that, you know, Joy was stabbed, that she was in a different position. She wasn't on the bed. She wasn't tied up. Yeah. It was just different.
When you said that she was the only one that had been stabbed, I thought that that was strange. And then you said that the mother had been shot twice, right?
Yeah, she had been shot twice in the head.
Okay.
Well, they were both shot in the
head.
She had been shot twice. The dad was only shot once.
That's interesting.
That also kind of made me think that maybe this was like
a woman,
somewhat of an well, a woman or, like, an amateur
that
didn't know what they were doing because they shot them, but they didn't die.
Right.
Right, like, right away. But, yeah, it's just very interesting, and it does kind of seem like a lot of locals or people who have investigated and researched this case do believe that Mary and Vernon were the murderers.
Okay.
But, again, no solid proof. They've never been formally charged. So I'm just going to leave it there. But I definitely think that out of all the leads and things that they have discovered and developed, this is the most likely. But that doesn't necessarily mean that this is what happened because the leads are just, there's nothing.
Yeah.
So other than that, though, there have been no leads, no movement in the case. Years after the murders, investigators who worked on the case back when it first happened went online and started sharing speculations. Some of these included that the perpetrators had cleaned up the crime scene after they killed the family. I don't know what exactly led them to believe this. I don't know if it just was the lack of evidence found or if it's just a theory that they had. Mm-hmm. They've also speculated that whoever killed them were from the neighborhood that the Sims lived in because they didn't think that the Sims would, like, let strangers into their house and there was no sign of a break-in.
Right.
But then again, it's the 60s. If it's somebody that, like, you might have seen around town or something, you might let them in.
Yeah.
Or they might have literally, like, shown them the gun as soon as they open the door, and then they're going to let them in. So I don't think that necessarily is a proven fact. Some people also say that the perpetrator or perpetrators would have been from the town because they would have known that the town would be quiet and, like, kind of abandoned during the game, so it would have been a good time to do this.
Yeah.
In 2016, 50 years after the murders, four students at the University of Florida decided to create a film project for their digital media production class about the case. So Kyle Jones, Deanna Kidd, Michael Walsh, and Elijah Howard studied the murders, studied the thousands of records, newspapers, and reports about the murders. And the film actually ended up being the first time that Vernon Fox, who I just talked about, Vernon and Mary.
Yeah.
In that film, it was the first time he spoke publicly to clear his name. He did an interview. I have not watched it yet because I wanted to, I didn't want to, like, take anything from it because it's all speculation. So I wanted to keep this as factual as possible. But I do want to watch it because I'm very interested in what he had to say. Jones and his classmates were kind of hopeful that doing this documentary would give the family some closure, just knowing that their family member's story is still out there and just bring more attention to it. But it's now been over 50 years and the triple homicide remains unsolved.
Wow, that's so insane.
Yeah. The former police chief in Tallahassee, Frank Studemeyer, called it, quote, "the worst crime I have ever seen in 28 years of law enforcement." And the murders remain on the minds of the Tallahassee Police Department and residents in the area to this day. Some are hopeful that advanced DNA technology may lead somewhere one day, but it's unclear how much, if any, DNA or other forensic evidence was even collected from the scene. So, you know, even though technology is improving, if they don't have anything to test, then they don't have anything to test.
And it sounds like they did a pretty thorough job, I mean, from what I can tell, of investigating the case. So if they did have something, I mean, they would have collected it, you know?
Exactly. And there probably wasn't much because it's like, okay, they tied the people up, but, or they tied Robert and Helen up. But then when the funeral home director got there,
he untied them.
So that probably compromised, especially back in 66, like, they probably wouldn't have been able to preserve it the best.
Right.
And then other than that, like, what evidence would there have been, especially if there was no sexual assault or anything like that? There just might not be any evidence.
Yeah, and they probably couldn't even trace, like, the bullets or anything because it's so far back. Yeah.
Yeah. And even if they can trace the bullets, it's like, okay, to this gun, but if the gun isn't registered or if they don't have it linked anywhere else, then who knows? And that's the thing with this case. It looks like it was a targeted, to me at least, it looks like it was, like, targeted at that family. Mm-hmm. So whoever committed the murders might not ever commit another crime.
Exactly.
So that's kind of where we're at today. I haven't been able to find any reports on the surviving family members, Norma and Judy, but we can only hope that they have found as much peace as possible and as much closure as possible and are living as happily as they can.
Yeah.
And that is the case of the Sims family murders, a truly horrific triple homicide that remains unsolved. Hopefully one day they will get justice. And, you know, I think that sharing their story can help because even though this is one of Florida's largest and most infamous murders, I had never heard of it. I even texted my mom, who literally went to college in Tallahassee, and she had never heard of it. And so I think it's just crazy that, like, this horrific, unsolved murder has never been solved, and, like, it's just not out there. So that's why I wanted to share this story today after I saw the suggestion come in from Paige. and looked it up. I was like, how have I not heard of this? We need to get their name out there.
Yeah.
Because you just never know. DNA testing, people might know something. People might say something. Mm-hmm. You never know what could happen. And I don't think that we should ever say a case can never be solved, because yeah, you just never know.
I mean, someone could do a deathbed confession, you know, because it's been that long. You don't, yeah, you just exactly. don't know.
Yeah. So that's why I wanted to share it today. I will also be posting photos of Robert, Helen, and Joy on our Instagram and Facebook. I'm also going to post some different, like, newspaper articles and things like that, because it's super interesting, just because it is pretty well documented in the newspapers.
Yeah.
And I found a lot of those as I was doing my research. So be sure to check out our Instagram and Facebook. And that's all I have for you guys today. You know, just remember The Sims, and if you can, share it, share their story, get their names out there again, because you never know.
Yep.
All right, you guys, thank you so much for listening. We will see you on Thursday with a brand new episode. And until then, keep it human.
Bye.